religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Reprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. This is May the 3rd on the East Coast, still May the 2nd on the West Coast, and we're so happy to have you here with us tonight. We got started a bit late tonight. I think all day today, most of the alternative media has been having some difficulty with communications. I know that some of the Patriot networks have been struggling to hear each other. Many people haven't been able to call into the shows. Of course, on this show, Evident Footprints, we would like you very much to call in, especially tonight, because we're going to be talking about different things that are going on around the world. Now, first things first, before I give out the numbers, now those of you who are on the BBSRadio.com website, you can easily see the phone numbers for Station 1, the 800 numbers there, and those numbers are there, so you pick up your phone and dial in and talk to us. Talk to our guests, ask our guest a question. Ask me a question, make a comment, share your ideas, your feelings about things, and participate in this show. Jim Murray tells me that he is not going to come on the air anymore unless you call in. Actually, he didn't say that, but it could happen. He could get very fed up and frustrated with the fact that no one's calling in. Now, I know he's a very interesting and sometimes very entertaining guest on this show, very informative and very knowledgeable and very experienced, very creative. And he says there's no such thing as the dumb question. So you can ask basically any question you choose. Now, there may be a dumb comment, but you're even allowed to make that. That's how liberal we are. We're searching for the truth on this show. We don't expect you to believe everything that you hear. However, if we say something that challenges the belief matrix, and we're talking about the mind-controlled or the mind-controlling mainstream media and the propaganda they feed us, then you owe it to yourself to participate in the show and do some research. And study some of the topics that we're talking about. Certainly, Google is a very valuable source of information. You can put a word or a topic into a Google search engine. I'm having trouble speaking tonight. And you can then come up with sometimes hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of references to a particular topic. So it's a very valuable tool to use in research. You will find, once you begin looking at a topic, whether we're talking about the planets, the galaxy, energy, technologies that have been hidden from mankind, you can take any one of those topics and find that there are many, many people who have brought these issues to the forefront, maybe aren't talking about it on a radio show, but certainly publishing articles and papers about their research. There is research going on. Unfortunately, every time we come up with a breakthrough in technology, it's usually suppressed. So we maintain our sovereignty and our freedom by exercising our mental muscles as well as our emotional muscles. So we want to encourage you to call in. Now, I'm going to give the numbers out quickly here. Toll-free in the United States, 877-876-5227. And in the USA and Canada, 888-815-9756. And if you want to call in on the direct line, area code 530-876-3222. Now, I'm going to bring tonight's guest on board. He is a weekly Friday night guest on Evident Footprints and has been pretty much since the beginning, although in the beginning we had him on Tuesday nights, and we moved him around once in a while to accommodate his or my schedule, but he's virtually been on the show every week, and he's dedicated himself to bringing you the truth. So please, use these numbers, call into the show tonight. He would be elated to hear from you and let us know that you're out there. And with that, I'm introducing my regular Friday night guest, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, how are you tonight?
Pretty good, Don, all things considered. How are you?
I'm excellent. Can you tell?
Yeah, usually there's a lot of energy in your voice. You're bouncing right along this evening. Sounds good.
Well, thank you. I'm sort of pumped tonight about a lot of things. You know, last week, it's actually been roughly a week now, about 11 p.m. Eastern Time, on the 24th, I published a series of galactic photos. And I published these photos with the intention of sharing these with people around the planet, which I think we're entitled to, especially here in the United States, since we invest our tax dollars and appropriations, government appropriations, in the search for not just extraterrestrial intelligence, but the wonders of the universe. And there is so much that's kept from us, and I've had a lot of visits to my website. Thousands and thousands of them, and pretty much a balance. Not many people have commented in terms of email, although I received some nasty comments from several individuals, which you wonder why. In fact, it had nothing to do with the photos. They wanted to criticize me because I wasn't pressing the issue of 9/11 or Iraq or Afghanistan, which I do on other shows. If they would listen to this show, they would very well know that. If they would read some of my articles, they would know my position about warfare and invading other countries. So I have been outspoken about all those things, and I guess it's just a sign of the times. We have all these converging energies coming into not just our solar system, but on this planet, and it's affecting people in many strange ways. And there are a lot of very covert technologies being used on people. You've got a massive amount of electromagnetic energy flying through the atmosphere and certainly affecting our health and our mental state, not to mention it's keeping us out of touch with who we are spiritually. Yet, by and large, out of well over 54,000 people that went to one page just to see some photos. And I say well over because now people are listening to this show. Now people are reading my research articles and the things that I post from other authors and other journalists and researchers. Even your pictures, Jim, are getting lots of hits, meaning people are looking at them. And I'm speaking about the dual synchronous capacitor photos that you designed, took of the designs that you did for Bethlehem Steel some years ago. Even that technology is being looked at by people, just in picture form. So it's heartening to know that people are starting to wake up. When I published these pictures, many, many people came to my site, and it began a dialogue. You can tell people are thinking a little bit outside the box, which is heartening. And I know your feelings about these photos, because you had described last week how impressive they were, and they still are. Believe it or not, they haven't lost any of their luster. But I can tell you that you've had over 2,500 people look at your photos and examine them.
Well, that's interesting. Maybe I should look around and see what else I have and give you some more.
Well, yes, absolutely. I would certainly post anything that you have. I think it's time we start sharing these things with folks and giving them the opportunity to contemplate solutions. And in some cases, you know, there may be a scientist in waiting out there that could be inspired by your work, or could open up an opportunity for you. This is not about sequestering the information and suppressing it.
If that were the case, I wouldn't cooperate. But let me see what I can find. And most of my photographs, unfortunately, are out east. But I did bring some with me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe over the weekend I'll take a look-see and get you some more copies.
Yeah. Now, what I'm noticing is out of the handful, really, you can't count the negative messages on both hands, okay? Using fingers, of course, to count. But the issue that these people bring up is what I call thinking inside the box. And I mentioned this at the beginning of my show last night. When you're in the box, it's a little bit difficult to think outside the box. Some aspect of you has to go outside the box to contemplate what possibilities might be. No one ever questions the fact that our space agency, NASA, has been showing pictures from within the galaxy, or supposedly pictures taken from within the galaxy of other galaxies. Now, how is that done? And what they're saying is that pictures cannot be taken outside of this galaxy, of our galaxy. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, it only doesn't make sense if they're considering our astronomers taking the pictures.
Yes, exactly. I mean, people, and it's a handful of people. And I'm sure they may mean well, although, other than the guy that gave me the death threat, which, you know, I kind of laughed off because it's, you know, people like that are just showing how dysfunctional they are. If you're that mad that I published pictures of the universe and didn't include Iraq, Afghanistan, and 9/11, maybe you should kill yourself. How do you respond to somebody like that? The dumbed down people have to crawl out from under a rock always and just try to ruin it for everyone else.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm confused. I mean, okay, maybe he doesn't get the point about the pictures taken outside of our own galaxy by another agent of some sort, but where does the death threat thing come in? Who does that hurt? Why would he be agitated to the point of issuing such a threat? I mean, what did he actually say?
Oh, well, you publish these photos. Why don't you... I mean, his words were, why don't you talk about the Zionists, blah, 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 and what they're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan, and why don't you talk about 9/11? Do you want on the list? We've got others on the list. And, that's an implied threat, okay? Now, on the list... But there was another guy that wanted to put words in my mouth about the photos that I had posted from the World Trade Center. And this guy had the answers. Oh, it's the news media got special permission to take these pictures while our whole military was under a stand-down order. They got a black chopper to go fly a news crew around? Come on. And then this guy was blaming this 9/11 on Jesus. So there's quite a bit of dysfunctionality going on. And I thought just for a moment that we would talk about, maybe you don't feel prepared to even discuss this, but I don't mean that you wouldn't be qualified, because my discernment tells me you are more than qualified to talk about this. What do you think is happening to normal mental processes in people? Now, I know you're not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but you're a thinking man. And when you see the things that are happening to the finer, subtler energies in the universe, and how are they affecting people. And you see there's a confrontation taking place with those energies?
Well, I may not be a psychologist, but, you know, I read up on a lot of stuff, and I'm also familiar with certain phenomenon simply because I have found that it also affects my life and the work that I'm trying to do. I'll give you an example. There was a very famous test done a number of years ago. I think it was sponsored by Duke University. They used to do a lot of psychic research at one time, and they used to do a lot of paranormal investigations and psychological profiling and things of that nature. And they came up with a very interesting idea. And what they did was they put an ad in the paper and it requested the assistance of avid card players for the sake of making a psychological test. And, of course, many people play cards on a regular basis, so they had quite a few comers on the response. And when these people showed up, they basically said, well, what's the test? And they said, oh, it's very simple. We're going to show you a card, and you simply write down what card it is. And, of course, the people that were involved said, well, that's no challenge. We can do that in our sleep. So the guy says, well, very well, let's proceed. Now, what they didn't tell them was that mixed in with the regular playing deck, they had cards that don't really exist. Like, for instance, a red 10 of clubs, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, some other, what you might refer to as a pseudo suit. And so they had these things distributed around in the deck. And, of course, as they flashed the cards, which they were showing at a pretty good clip, the people were just, these card players were just avidly plunging into the challenge and writing down the cards that they were shown until they got to one of these pseudo suits. And then they had the most incredible reactions. What I remember clearly was two or three different remarks. One person said, oh my God, that card is changing from black to red. How does it do that? Another person would say, that's funny, I can't see that card. And they had all these different remarks which seemed to indicate that there was a mental clash in the processing mechanism. Now, the senses were obviously not at fault because they were reliably reporting the other cards to which they responded in a normal fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they saw one of these cards that were bogus, what happened was there was this, the sensory receptor said, hey, it's a red 10 of clubs. And the mind said, but there is no red 10 of clubs. Therefore, I can't see it. So the tilt sign came on instead. Now, that might sound like a real silly test, but I have to be honest with you, Don, it really affected me when I read the results of this, because this is the same kind of reaction that I have seen in showing people equipment that behaves in a manner that they can't explain. You know, you get the similar reactions. So I think that one of the things that happens is we spend our whole life being prepared in a certain line of thinking. And if you accept that line of thinking without question, the problem is the pathways in your brain become oriented toward a particular flow of information. And there's a certain value of expectation associated with that. So that, oh, you say, oh, yeah, this is a problem in celestial mechanics. Oh, This is a problem in conservation of angular momentum. This is a problem, you know, in biology or organic chemistry, whatever it happens to be. So the minute you recognize the subject matter, it sets up a certain expected pathway in the brain that relates your cognitive senses to a particular data pool, perhaps, or background information stash. And with that is the expectation that you're familiar enough with this that there won't be any surprises. Well, if something is suddenly conveyed to you that is really outside of your box, then you get this strange reaction. Now, whether people think about it or not, all of them, myself included, I mean, I'm not trying to put myself outside of this, we are all programmed to some extent, and our belief systems have outer limits. And it's only because of what we have chosen to accept as our reality. Now, people are afraid of the unknown. And one of the things that they're afraid of is what they don't know. Even though it's a ridiculous thing to be afraid of, because really we know very little. But they set boundaries for themselves, and within that, the confines of those boundaries, they feel a certain comfort level. So when that's threatened, all kinds of strange things happen. And our whole society is a series of circumstances and a series of stimuli which are imposed upon us from childhood through adulthood. And whether we are aware of it or not, that is itself a form of programming.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, what comes along is something that was not in that paradigm for you. And once that happens, boom, you get a tilt sign.
Well,
now, what impressed me the most about what you were telling me earlier was this guy's comment about, well, you can't take a picture of our galaxy from outside the galaxy. Now, if you really think about what he said, it's true. Of course you can't. But somebody else can.
Yeah. Well, we've been programmed, you know, while you were just talking, what came to my mind was this phrase that we so often hear as we're young, and we hear it throughout our life, what you don't know won't hurt you, or what you don't know can't hurt you.
I wish it were true.
Yeah, that is a bald-faced lie. But people accept these things without even questioning them. I mean, no one seemed to, you know, I had a conversation with one of my former guests this evening, and we were talking about those photos, and I said, I asked him in a general way, do you see the paradigm here that or the construct? People are trying to explain what the outside of the matrix is from within the matrix. A simpler way to put it would be they're trying to explain what it looks like on the outside of the box, although they're inside the box. And there's no windows on the box to see outside. So it dawned on him then that I had made a point. And in fact, in the first sentence of the piece that I wrote about the pictures, I raised the question, or I raised the issue of the source of the photos, or the fact that the manner in which the photos were acquired by our scientists in the space industry is not revealed to us. It can't be both. We can't have both. In other words, if we have not been outside the galaxy, then how do they get an artist to do a rendering of what it looks like outside the galaxy? They would have to admit that they got the picture from somewhere else. So they had the artist draw up the picture as the ruse for hiding the fact that there is intelligent life that they have contacted. As simple as that. I made a statement at the beginning of that piece that I pasted on the photos page, and if I can quote that, with the advent of the Hubble telescope, we have been given a sampling of galactic realms beyond our wildest imaginations. NASA has periodically released photos of other galaxies and nebulae, but we are told little or nothing about how these photos were actually taken, or in some cases, acquired. I state very simply in the first paragraph what the issue is here. And I go on to talk about whether or not we're given the truth, and whether or not there is intelligent life out there. And you recall the rest of what I wrote. We sort of joke, because there is some sarcasm in it. But the bottom line is, you can't look at these photos outside of our galaxy. Why is it that we can take pictures of other galaxies, but this is an impossibility that someone could take a picture of ours? It doesn't make sense. And we have been seeing some of these pictures have been released in, and we found this, but I'm saying the source of my pictures, these pictures are unique in that sense, in that they are a complete set as I acquired them. And no one from NASA gave me those pictures. So this is my argument, that they got the pictures too, or they got some of the pictures. Now, why aren't they telling us the truth about that? Well, that's like everything else. Like religion, it's like the economy, it's like our water, our skies, our food, our money, it's everything. Everything is a lie. And we have to come to grips with that. But I wanted to make that point because my friend then said, oh, my goodness, I feel somewhat embarrassed. I feel embarrassed that I questioned the purpose of these, when in reality what you said is very true, that you can't have it both ways, or one way and not the other. It can't be just one, it can't be just inside the box and not outside the box. That's the point I'm making. Any comment?
Yeah, it brings up a lot of interesting points. For instance, I forget the name of it, but there was a novel written about a very similar situation where these people lived in a false world, and they were always talking about freedom. Getting out of this world and finding out what lay beyond. And finally, one of their own people discovered a way to leave that world. And he went out and looked around and said, oh, my God, it's much bigger out there. There's all kinds of things going on. And, he said, this is what everybody's been waiting for. So he comes back and he tells them all this wonderful stuff he experienced in the outside world, and they promptly got angry and killed him. And, that is exactly the kind of thing that happens. Now, Wilhelm Reich wrote a book called The Murder of Christ, and I don't want to get into all of what he said, because it's actually tangential to some of the stuff we're talking about here. But the bottom line was that people can be in misery, and they claim they don't like it, but they're more afraid of the change that they have to go through to circumvent their misery than they are of continuously accepting miserable circumstance. So when the Savior makes an appearance and says, it's this way, folks, this is what you're looking for, the minute that they test the reality of his solution and find that it's true, he is in grave danger, because our emotional sickness, our neurotic tendency is to preserve the status quo at all costs, because if there's something different, it might be too painful to readjust to it. Now, the reason I bring this up, Don, is because I guarantee you unequivocally that the people who control this planet are well aware of this human tendency, and they make good use of it. Look at the situation we have here in America. This is the land of the free. You've got people that are taxed almost to the point of collapse. They're still telling you, what do you mean? This is the land of the free. Well, I mean, come on. What kind of response is that? If they weren't really thinking on their own, they wouldn't come to this conclusion. This is the result of programming. Another thing that brings this point home was an experiment that I read about a number of years ago, where the difference between training and how it affects logic and just following your normal tendencies. And what they did was they took a maze and they put a partition somewhere in the middle of it, and they put a mouse in the maze and they trained them to go through the maze until he reached this partition. And every time he reached the partition, he was rewarded with food. Then one day they took the partition out and they put the food at the far end of the maze. So what happened when they put the mouse in there was he ran through his little learned path until he got to where the blockage used to be. And then he just stood there. It's like, oh, geez, you know, now what? Where's my reward? He just didn't know what to do. And yet they took a field mouse who hadn't been programmed, and he found his way through the maze all the way to the far end and ate the peanuts or the cheese or whatever the heck it was that was in there. So the point being that regardless of how smart you are, there are types of conditioning which can affect logical conclusions. Whereas, if you're not conditioned, your response will be to do something else, to think something else, to conclude differently, whatever. But if you are trained to be in the box, and you are trained to accept the confines of that box, then it's twice as difficult for you to imagine something outside the box, or even to care about it, because of that comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's part of what's wrong.
Well, yes. Now, you pointed out a very valid fact. In fact, there's probably even a scientific explanation within the psychotic industry of psychoanalysis we express that we are constantly searching for change, yet our actions belie that, in that we resist change. And right now we have one of our politicians who is running for the presidency is claiming, vote for me for real change. Yet we know that if there is a change, it's always a change for the worse, and never to create better conditions. And we buy that lie as well as all the other ones. Of course, when he gets in there, there will be change, but it will not be what we would intend to change, especially when we're just blindly accepting that on blind faith, and really on stupidity. Where is the foundation in that statement? Vote for me for real change, or it's time for change. It sounds good to those people.
It sounds great, but it's been time for change for 100 years. I mean, stop and think about it. Do you know any politician? And I'm saying any politician in any office that has campaigned on a particular platform and then literally carried it out after he got in there?
Can't think of one. tell you the
truth. Neither can I. So my point is, are all the rest of humanity asleep that they don't notice that? Isn't there something a little bit wrong? Isn't there a hint that we are, you know, knee high or waist high or neck high in BS here?
Yes. Now, my earlier question, and I asked a very convoluted and complex, multi-tiered type of question because I made a long statement before it, but we're back to that point again where we have all this technology that we're being bombarded with, and there's some things going on in the universe from realms beyond our reality that are intended to make this or cause this place we call planet Earth and the inhabitants that are in line with universal law and really obeying God's laws or the Creator's laws, ultimately, those are the people that are going to be chosen to be part of this higher consciousness. You wouldn't go into a prison and hire a murderer to run a bank normally, but I would venture to guess there's probably plenty of people who have paid for murder and people who are running banks who have paid someone large amounts of money to have someone murdered. But the point I'm making is you wouldn't think that person in prison would be capable of running a bank efficiently. There's a good chance that he wouldn't be in prison for murder if he made something worthwhile of his life. It's a generalization, but you hopefully get my point. We're talking about using your brains and being productive, in a sense, maybe even being creative, but not at the expense of everyone else. So the people at the lower end of the spectrum who are power mongers and fear mongers, are going to be at the bottom of the scale of the eligible candidates for that shift in consciousness. Now, they could save themselves by going through the process that the rest of us are going through, acknowledging universal law and obeying God's laws as opposed to just using everyone like a vampire, sucking the life force out of everyone just for their own power and greed. Now, with that comes all of this technology that they have covertly created, and then we have this paradigm shift that's taking place in a more universal context where the energy is more refined and of a higher vibration. And I was speaking about the clash between those because it's obvious that there are people waking up. There are people who are conscious. There are people who are daily becoming more conscious and beginning to take on some of these issues that we're talking about, both the ones I mentioned as well as yourself. Some are not going to wake up. That's going to be a soul choice. Some are waking up, and some are awake. And those are likely going to be the people that participate in whatever is to come. But I was interested in your perspective from a scientific level as well as, you know, your spiritual views. Are you perceiving that clash of those energies? Or is it just me or...
Well, no, I don't think it's just you, and I'd like to point out too that I think the clash of the energies, as you've called it, it's not so much a question of one group of people at a particular level of consciousness, let's say, clashing with another group who are at another level of consciousness. It's much more subtle than that. It's actually more like one part of an individual clashing with another part of an individual, and the result is total immobilization in certain areas. That's really what I mean when I say the tilt sign comes on. It's like the eyes glaze over and the mind can't, for some reason, can't grapple with whatever is coming next. I'll give you a perfect example of it. I was watching that remake of the movie The Fly not too long ago, which is a pretty interesting film. And Jeff Goldblum and, I forget the name of the girl.
Gina Davis.
Yes, Gina Davis play in it. And when he first brings her to his laboratory, he asks her for something personal that she doesn't think can be misrepresented or fraudulently represented so that he can test this machine in front of her. So she takes off one of her stockings and gives it to Jeff. He puts it in the teleporter and starts the sequence, and of course, poof, it disappears in the one pod, and it appears on the other side of the room in the other pod. So she goes over there, the door opens, the smoke clears, and she picks up her stocking, and she turns to Jeff and says, "I don't get it." And he said, "Oh, yes, you do, but your mind refuses to accept it." And that's a perfect, exact statement that sums up exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the technological issues, you know, like, let's name a few things, you know, things we've talked about. Free energy, teleportation, anti-gravity, extraterrestrials, all of these things are things that fall into the category that most people would say are outside the box that has been defined as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, rather than cope with that on that level, what I used to do, and maybe this would be helpful for some people, if you can't accept a UFO, if you can't accept the possibility of life on another world, if you can't accept free energy or any of these other concepts that are being discussed nowadays, forget all that stuff. It doesn't matter. What's important is this. Concentrate on anything that's outside your immediate realm, but undeniably in your spectrum of existence. For instance, take a drop of water, put it on a microscope slide, and look at the incredible variety of life that lives in there. Look at the stars. Via telescope or binoculars, look at the vista of the night sky and realize that these are things that you have just been gazing at without really thinking about it. There is a being of some sort that created all this stuff. There is a vastness to space, whether it's inner space or outer space, that totally paralyzes the mind. And it is incredibly vast, incredibly complex. Now, if you're willing to do those two things, or either of those two things, that will immediately set you up for the following example. If we are in this incredibly complex universe, obviously part of it, and obviously it's been created by something, and if this is so far beyond our ability to comprehend, then set that unbelievability as your outer limits. And once you do that, pardon me, you will realize that there are a whole strata of things that fall closer to us within that infinite setting that suddenly become a lot more believable. For instance, if we talk about a divine being that made an infinitely large cosmos that has all these wonders in it and millions of stars, trillions of worlds, and only God himself knows what else is out there, then it seems very acceptable to say, oh, by the way, on one of these worlds, we may have someone who has a technology superior to ours. What's the problem? You know, it's that kind of a thing. You have to gently open the door and step out. And once you do, you say, hey, it's not so bad out here.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you stay within the confines of your box and try to imagine what's beyond, as you said earlier, the stress is too much on the brain, you know.
Well, we so readily, though, submit to this control. They have, like you said, they have done a very good job at suppressing knowledge and curtailing consciousness. You said so yourself in a slightly different way. But that's what you were saying, if I read you right.
Well, that's true, but you know, when you stop and analyze it, the way in which that's accomplished is actually by exhaustion.
Yes.
See, when you are real young and you start thinking about these things, and you are discouraged, but you're still full of pep and vim and vigor and whatever, and so before you know it, doggone it, that thought is back again or something similar, and you go and talk to another authority about it, and boom, cold water gets poured on you. Well, figure that process and extend it through for 30, 40, 50 years, and by the time you reach the end of that period of time, if you're a fairly normal individual, you're exhausted. So it's like, yeah, okay, you know, why bother thinking about it? I'll just go to work, pay my taxes, you know, and do whatever I'm expected to do. Well, isn't that the same process that's used to break a horse?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. Now I was referring to these two types of energy, okay? Let's say the controlling energy, the vibration, the frequency of this planet versus what's happening. Now, my understanding, I don't want to use the term belief because it's a knowing that leads me to say what I'm going to say, and that's that there's no way that this lower form of energy can predominate any longer or dominate or prevent this higher form of energy from coming in and being making itself present and useful and obtainable and transformable. If that's a word. Is there a word such as transformable?
Yeah, I think so.
Are you getting my meaning? I'm referring to that clash of those energies, because there is a clash. These people are very, I say these people, you know, those that operate from the dark, negative side, even though they're producing positive reactions, using negativity in a positive direction, they're really trying to countermand the higher authority of these higher vibrations.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying. Let me just shift that paradigm a hair, if I may.
Okay.
I think that both these forces have always been here, or at least have been here for a long time. You've got the guys that are hard at work to produce the negative effects, and you've got, let's call it the good side, that is vibrations from there are of a higher nature. Now, both of these vibrations have been flooding our Earth for quite some time. The problem is that the way society has been organized and the way in which our civilization has evolved, it's actually easier to respond to the lower vibrations in the beginning, because they tie in to the things that we need for survival on this earth. But when you reach a certain point in the way things unfold, the consciousness begins to change, and it becomes more obvious to the individual beings, hey, there's another way of looking at all this. And I think that represents a shift in consciousness. That's what this whole age of Aquarius is really supposed to be about, is the coming to another level of knowing, as you put it. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting, Don, if you think about it, the guys who create the bad vibrations are actually partially responsible for this evolutionary change.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it wasn't for their own greed, and for the fact that they are constantly tightening the screws, you know, it's the old boil the frog routine. If you put the frog in the water and slowly turn up the temperature eventually he'll be cooked without complaining. But if you turn the temperature up too suddenly, in haste, well, then he can feel that, and he jumps out of the pot. And that's exactly what's happened in the last 20 or 30 years. The negative side has said, okay, we're going to accelerate our program. We're going to accomplish our objective sooner. Well, in any function in physics, when you accelerate the rate of a curve, the rate of change of that curve becomes even more obvious. And I think that that's exactly what's happened. The evil that runs the world has accelerated their intentions, and that effort has wound up in boosting the consciousness in such a way that the rest of us have become more aware of them and alternatively more aware of other options.
Yes. Yes.
And
I
actually
agree.
It's a beautiful thing as long as it propagates quickly enough for us to avert the goals of the negative crowd.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, and just for not that we have to get into a discussion about these photos, but it's a representation of truth, and what's out there. What is the representation of maybe a grander or a higher reality than what we have been conditioned to understand and accept and follow, as you so aptly described in your example of the maze, and how we can be conditioned to not see when the door is open or the window is open, or there is no door there at all, or no window. We respect these boundaries. It's like a street that you drive on. Now, there are reasons why you drive on the street as opposed to driving on the sidewalk. What would you do in the event that the street became a sinkhole? Would you still try to drive around it, or would you just stop? Most people stop. Now, I think you might be violating one of man's laws in the sense that you drove on the sidewalk, but if it depended upon your survival to do so, who could argue that? Yet this system would still give you the ticket and maybe throw you in jail for doing that. For being creative outside of the matrix, or for extricating yourself from the matrix, even if it meant saving your life, you still have to pay that ticket. That's how predominant the control system is. And I've seen, it's a simple example I'm giving here. It's very basic. But it's an everyday example that people go through all the time. And you can apply it to other situations in our lives, related to our vocations and related to religion and our education and how we are nickel and dime to death because someone says we have to do it or we must do it, and there's a penalty for not doing it. Although we never even question the validity of these laws that we have to follow in the context of that creation. I can't see that anyone stopped God from creating anything. And yet, there is so much that we deny that he created. Who do we give the credit to? You see, we have all of these dichotomies working at the same time, back and forth. And I'm being somewhat logical here, but I'm also speaking from the heart center and looking at how I see our inability to cope with a higher reality, as long as we're allowing ourselves to permit someone else to steal our sovereignty, to steal our freedom, to steal our creativity, and really to steal the purpose for why we are here on this planet. How many people actually ask themselves, why am I here? What is life about? What is it really about?
So that's a good question. I've never taken a poll, but I will venture to guess that very few people bother to worry about it. I think what happens, and this is just from my personal experience, I'm not an authority, but I think what happens is whatever they wind up doing to earn a living, eventually, in their own mind, justifies their existence. So, like if a guy becomes a painter, or a carpenter, or a lawyer, or whatever, all of a sudden, that's what he's here for. And that really doesn't, that's not necessarily the answer to the question. That's just how you are managing to remain here, or
well,
how you're sustaining yourself.
Yeah, that's just something you do.
Yeah, it's not the answer to the question, but since things are rigged, you might say, to avoid ever addressing that issue, the people who play into the system wind up never asking the question. It's just, oh, here we go. You know, here's a thought for you. One of the things that I always hated was cutting grass. To me, it was the biggest waste of time. And so many people say, oh, but look how beautiful my lawn is. It's all nice and green, and it's well-trimmed and everything. And I got in a vicious argument one time with a neighbor who was obsessed with cutting his grass. And I said, well, look what you do. I say, you seed your lawn in the spring. The grass comes up. You get on your motorized lawnmower, and you run around your whole half acre and trim it all down. It rains the following night. The grass grows another 2 inches. You're out there doing the same thing. You're using up gasoline. You spent $2,500 on your riding lawnmower, and you got to put oil in it. You got to maintain it, and it's all for the sake of keeping the grass short. I said, if you didn't have grass, you'd have lots of hours of extra time. You wouldn't have spent the money on the lawnmower, and you could have done something more useful. I said, if you really want your property to be green, why don't you plant moss? Moss is green, and it only grows a half an inch tall. Well, naturally, that didn't get a very favorable response. You know, it's amazing. The guy interpreted it as a personal attack, which it wasn't meant to be. It was just an interesting exercise in logic. You know, it's the same old story. Why did they build the Eiffel Tower? Well, they built the Eiffel Tower so they could put a red light on top so the planes wouldn't hit it. Well, it's stupid, but that's the kind of nonsense we're embroiled in. If you examine your life, you'll find that many, many aspects of your life are planned out for you, and that's exactly how they work. They don't accomplish anything except they keep you busy, and they keep you spending money, and they prevent you from exploring other things. Period.
Yes. Now, my point here, we're running short on time. My general point was in reference to those photos, and the generally I would say that there most of the people must have had some change in consciousness, an elevation of consciousness, and if they think about the things that I said, or they just think about what those pictures represent, they will have some amount of expanded consciousness, hopefully to the extent that people will wake up and say, why is this being hidden from us? Why is it that we are not to know these things? Are these people who control and run this planet that afraid of us finding out the truth, that somehow that they will be less than what they are? Is that their motivation for this? Or are they that devoid of any consciousness or any compassion or empathy for the people on this planet or even themselves? Because they're ignorant of the consequences of what they do until the axe comes down on them. And their charade is over, and they are removed from here and sent somewhere else to spend their life being some contaminated particle underneath a rock, hopefully, for a long time, that they can't move and they can feel the accumulative effect of all the misery they've created over thousands of years through their bloodlines on this planet. I see light at the end of the tunnel, and this discussion here, hopefully somebody's going to get this message and figure out that we're talking outside the box. We're looking into the box at it, but we're also affecting the higher energies. We're stimulating the energies. We're stirring the pot, so to speak. So my reference to the photos was a way, because people are so responsive to visual images. So I gave them some real images, and they're so dumbed down, they say, these can't be real. Or I have seen these. Well, maybe they've seen representations of them, but they haven't seen them. When you see the silts in Ken Adachi's chemtrail photos, and you see metaphysical manifestations, paranormal manifestations of things that exist that not everyone can see, but we captured these things on film, and we can show these on film. Those are on my website, too. If these things are just little trinkets or little bones to throw out there to get people to wake up and to think a little bit further than, I got to go get my riding lawnmower in the shop this weekend. So, the cut is mirror smooth. You know, you're right. We're so entrapped in this three-dimensional construct that there's no hope for a lot of people. So why are they here? Well, I guess that guy's there to mow his lawn. And you're there to give him a hard time about it. I'm just kidding. Any closing comments, Jim?
Well, this line of conversation has opened up a lot of interesting thoughts in my mind. And in closing, I would like to comment on one thing. Have you ever heard of a philosophical discussion called Flatland?
Flatland. Can you be more specific, let's say?
Yeah, well, basically, it was a discussion that was written up quite some time ago about a two-dimensional world called Flatland. And essentially, this is what you would envision if you could see living creatures on a piece of paper that only had height and width, but no depth. So when you have people in Flatland, you can imprison them by just drawing a square around them, which is very interesting because they can't climb over it. There's no dimension in that direction. And the thing that's fascinating about this whole presentation on Flatland is that a three-dimensional object which penetrates the box, like, for instance, the guy erases part of the square with an eraser on a pencil and allows people to escape from the square in Flatland. Well, if they can perceive this giant eraser coming down from a third dimension, that's God, or that's something, completely beyond their understanding. So it's something that they label with a mystical term because they don't know how else to perceive it. Well, we're all in a flat land of sorts. And what we're trying to do is allow that higher force to use the eraser and get rid of part of the wall so that we can explore what's beyond. But I think that this whole idea that we just discussed is really the crux of the issue in terms of consciousness, human evolution, our personal freedoms, and a whole mess of other things. It might really be worthwhile to delve into this more deeply at some in some future show if you would like to do that.
Well, I'm honored that you would do that. Yeah, why not? That's what this show is about. Evidently, I didn't get anyone convinced enough to call into the show, or they're just totally riveted by this conversation. But I can tell you that my own perusing of these pictures and those of Ken Adachi have expanded my consciousness and my perception and even my intuition to know and to be impulsed to share this with people. It's a very unorthodox message in a way, and maybe to some people it's going to be very challenging to their paradigm, whether it's religious or scientific or whatever. I don't claim to be an expert in certain types of science, but I can certainly attach my mind to the possibility of existing scientific principles or solutions to unsolved scientific problems. And if their math is the only tool to do that and it's not doing the job, then maybe math is not the answer, if you get my meaning. So,
I definitely get your meaning. I mean, Tesla himself made a beautiful comment on just that main thing. He said, mathematics alone can lead you astray from reality, something terrible, because your figures can eventually be manipulated to tell you anything that you can imagine. He says, but what you really need to do is to anchor those mathematical expressions in reality, and the only way you can do that is through experimentation. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Going up to the wall and looking for the exit is, in a sense, experimentation.
Well, how many people do you think...
If you just ride your lawnmower and never approach the limits of your confinement, then you'll never do anything different, right?
Yes. I wonder how many people would think to separate the molecules in the paper and see if there's a way out there.
Well, I've never been to Flatland, so it's a difficult question.
It depends on the weight, I guess, of the paper, right? And how sharp your nails happen to be that day.
Well, actually, I think if we stick with the definition of flatland, you couldn't do it. Because to pry away at the paper automatically indicates depth, and there isn't any.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah, I'm using that example because would it be our fear, or would it be the impossibility of accomplishing it that would stop us?
I think it's a combination of things. For instance, if you muse too deeply on something that you can't find the answer to, the result is an unsettled feeling. And so it's a lot easier to accept somebody else's explanation when it's handed to you, because now you can put the issue to rest and you're comfortable. And that's exactly where we're at. We're so comfortable that we don't realize we're at the bottom of a garbage trench.
Yes. Well, that's putting it mildly.
Oh, I didn't want to be rude.
Yes, I appreciate that.
But, the fact of the matter is, any form of evolution requires personal effort. If you're trying to play a piano, if you're trying to become an artist, if you're trying to become an orator, it doesn't matter what it is. You got to apply yourself. And your climb from the garbage dump to a higher consciousness is no different. It requires effort.
Yes. Well, Jim, we are out of time. I want to thank you. It was a very enlightening show. You got my my consciousness expanding by the things that you said, and hopefully the listeners got something out of this show. You will be on next week again on the 9th of May, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm actually going to be giving a clinic early in May, and we might talk about that a little bit in this context, because I'm going to be dealing with some people who have disabilities, and they're getting stressed out by things that are happening. And a friend of mine that is running the facility that helps these people has asked me to consider music as a solution to bring about some healing in that area. So I may have a very interesting report next Friday to share with you in the context of what we talked about.
Sounds good. I'd be interested.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and I wish you a very good weekend, and looking forward to next week's show.
Okay, Don, thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and I'd also like to thank all those people out there listening to Evident Footprints. Tonight, our special guest has been Mr. Jim Murray. He'll be with us again next Friday, and we're going to take this conversation up a notch or two. In the meantime, I'd like to thank Seth for some great sound tonight, and Donald Newsom for making the show possible. Also, please tune in next week. I've got some really interesting shows coming up. Actually, everyone who's on the show is a really good friend already. So be checking the schedule. The new schedule will get posted. If you haven't been to my website, directlightproductions.com, I urge you to do so. You can see some of Jim Murray's scientific creativity and inventions there on the site, as well as the photos that we were talking about. Lots of good articles and important information. There's even some entertaining videos to watch on the animals page that will really give you a chuckle or two. In the meantime, I wish everyone a great weekend. Have a night full of peace, love, and light. And have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.